Pivot Point on Kaya Biz.
Indeed, it's time for Pivot Point here on Kaya Biz, and you are listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Well, for many of you that operate in the financial services space, you'd be well aware that there's a number of institutions who really go out of their way through, of course, corporate structures to assist us in our need for access to financial resources. And this evening, we speak to the CEO of Rand Mutual Assurance Life. The CEO joins us in studio, Mr. Bilal Adam, to give us some insight. A very good evening and welcome, sir.
Thank you, Gugu. I'm quite excited to be here and talk about the company.
Fantastic. And I think that's a very good point to start, right? Many people, when they hear the name and the title of the company, Rand Mutual Assurance Life, might get thrown off by the assurance aspect, but simplify it for us as to what it is that your company does.
Okay, I think to start off, we are a company that's 127 years old.
Yeah.
So I think we've been here for quite a while. We're very well established. But we're quite a niche insurer, so we play mostly in the workman's compensation space.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, we've evolved the company into a life insurance company as well. So I think we're unique in what we do in South Africa. But again, not very well known, but very well established, quite big. And we play quite tightly in the workman's compensation space and focusing on the workers in South Africa.
To give us some context, as you say, within the workers' compensation space, would that be more of a B2B segment? So as an employee of a particular company, I might not necessarily interact directly with your brand, but my institution or employer essentially would have a conversation with an entity like yours.
Absolutely. So I think it's a very complicated stakeholder structure.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, it is the employer that pays the premium, but the beneficiary ultimately is the employee. So normally you'd find that the premium stage is a very B2B outlook that we take. However, once we have a claim, then we move over to the employee.
Yeah.
And currently we insure about 1.1 million employees, largely in the mining and metal sectors in South Africa.
That's huge. And I think we need to underpin the aspect that you highlighted. In the beginning, as you say, the premium payments, it's more B2B, but when someone falls ill, I'm thinking of healthcare cases in the mining industry, this is essentially where you have the ability to change people's lives and give them a sense of sustainability in terms of income.
Absolutely, and I think that's what makes the strategy for RMA Life quite exciting. So I think we find ourselves in a very unique position. I think we're the only company outside of the compensation fund, other than the one in the construction industry that does this, or that we have been doing it for the while that we have been doing it. And so what we find is exactly what you meant. Because we're a mutual company, initially we were set up to actually take care of the employees, of these employees that pay the premium on behalf of the employees. And our mandate was quite clear, and that's to make a difference in the life of these workers.
Mm. And how has that been? I guess if you can share some stories or even stats and figures, because so often for us living in urban areas, when we think of mining towns and individuals who are impacted by occupational healthcare challenges and incidents, it's far removed, right? We think of other people in other towns. But as highlighted, this really does have the opportunity to preserve the well-being and financial stability of households right across the country.
Absolutely. And I think especially if you look at the mining history in South Africa,
yeah,
a lot of it was migrant labors. So you would find that with the migrant labor, a lot of the employees in the companies were not only South African.
Mm.
They were Southern African, people from Mozambique, Malawi, Lesotho, Swaziland. And what we find, I think, and due to our historical past, I think it wasn't also a very well-paid industry.
Mm.
And you'd find prior to a certain point, a lot of these employees, when there was an injury at duty, they weren't covered. Now, for a short-term injury, that's fine, but in the longer term, if there's a fatality, to take care of the family of that employee, or alternatively, if there's a permanent disability, it became quite difficult for, I think, those families to survive. And I think it also goes beyond just compensation. You know, I think it's also just restoring dignity to those people. You know, the person who has been the breadwinner, he's been the breadwinner for many years, his family looks up to him, and suddenly he's out of a job and he doesn't know what to do anymore. You know, so I think we try to think ourselves as giving these people or coming into work with a sense of purpose and restoring to the dignity to these type of workers.
Definitely. Yeah. I do want to come back to that sense of purpose, because I think it's so critical within the work that you do and how it might speak to how peers in the industry can learn from you. But Bilal, as you mentioned, you work with beneficiaries. As you say, RML Assurance really does speak to changing and, of course, being there when the worst case scenario does take place for South African households, or I guess employees within the mining fraternity specifically. Help us understand how you actually work with beneficiaries who might be untraceable. And I ask this question because typically when it comes to pension funds and the likes, individuals pass on, and you know, we've seen almost more than what, 43 billion rand in unclaimed pension benefits. How does it work within your organization and tracking and tracing individuals?
So I'm glad to say, and that's quite an important question, because we know, again, historically there's lots of issues in terms of tracing employees. But because our sole mandate is the fact that we've been set up to take care of these employees, we actually go out of our way to try and trace these employees. So some of the things that we do, our claim and pensions team, I think in my view, is quite amazing. So we don't have many unclaimed pensions compared to some of the other companies in South Africa.
Oh, fantastic.
I mean, if it's a few million, then I'd be exaggerating, but it's quite a small number.
In terms of percentages?
I mean, our total balance sheet is about 25 to 30 billion. So if you're looking at 1 or 2 million, it's not a big amount. And the reason being is we go out of our way to trace these pensioners. So even a lot of them, obviously, once they get injured, they go back to a rural area. A lot of it is the fact that we have to trace families.
Mm-hmm.
So we go out of our way, even to the point where we hire private investigators that may go out to a rural village to look for the family, try to get an understanding of who the person was, who is... His family was in South Africa. We know it's a lot more complicated. Someone could have more than one wife, more than one children. So yeah, I think we do pride ourselves in going out of our way to actually seeking these individuals and paying them, because that's basically our job. That's what we set up to do.
Right, that speaks to boots on the ground, and as you say, you know, really being invested in making sure that you are able to identify these individuals. I'm keen to understand, as we've witnessed from many mining houses and some of the industries that you're exposed to, they have what I guess, you know, lower rates of fatalities at their mines as they continue to mechanize because of the heightened level of occupational health care being provided for, minimal numbers in terms of injuries on duty as well. Is that a trend that is also reflected, I guess, in your books and in your numbers?
Absolutely. I think in the last few years, the numbers have come down, which is what we want. But I think even more important than that is we find that there's a change or amendment in the Quiet Act, and that's going to help us change our focus to prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're saying is we actually don't want the injury to occur in the first place. So we actually want to prevent it from happening. And a lot of it goes to the point that we want to try and understand the psyche or the behavior of the employee and what will cause him to actually endure that injury. And a lot of it, I think, goes down to financial well-being. So in South Africa, we know about 80% of the consumers or these employees are actually in debt. And I think it actually takes their mind away from the job that they should be doing, and that's where this the cause of the injuries comes from.
True.
So I think in prevention, things like financial well-being, that's going to be a big part of our focus going forward.
Oh, Bilal, you just touched on such an important aspect, right? Because a moment ago, we're talking about Black Friday. We headed to the festive season. South Africans will be under pressure to spend. And that all speaks to our financial psychology and financial behavior, right? And even what it is that we expose to improve our levels of financial literacy, that hopefully builds a sense of financial resilience to avoid the levels of over-indebtedness. I'm keen to understand through your organization how it is that you provide additional support to beneficiaries to say, hold on, not only here is a lump sum and a payout that you are entitled to, but here are the tools to actually manage this money and make sure that there's a sustainable track to it for it to last.
Yeah, so I think starting with the prevention, I think even before the injury occurs, we try to engage with the employer companies, whether it's in the mining or metal industry, even in classes outside of that or industries outside of that, where we try to actually get a hold of, together with the HR departments to try and review the employees. We provide financial wellness workshops, and at no cost to the employer, we actually review these employees and see which one of them are indebted and what the reason is. And largely you'd find it's the fault of the financial industry, the retail industries, where they give unlimited credit. People are over-insured because people are continuously selling their insurance. And so what we try to do is we try to sit down with them, do a bit of debt counseling, see how we can help them to rehabilitate themselves and put them on the right path.
Yeah.
And hopefully that helps with their financial wellness, their mental wellness, and then leading to lower injuries. If it comes to a point where a worker is actually injured, what we then do with them is obviously we sit down with them and we try to actually bring them up again. It's not only about paying them the money. What we try to actually do is to reskill them. So there's a lot of effort that we spend on reskilling workers as an example.
To move into other sectors?
To move into other sectors. Okay. So as an example, you could have a mine worker who may lose both of his legs. He can no longer go down in the mine or have a work there. He gets his pension. But we try to actually make him a lot more sustainable. I think it's a lot more... when people are injured, it's more to do with just your compensation.
Yes.
It's got to do with your pride, you know, being the breadwinner and having to provide for the company, having to wake up every morning and doing things. And we've done a lot of things, I think, and we've seen it firsthand. You know, as an executive team, we've gone down to places like the Eastern Cape, places like Malawi, to actually spend time with these pensioners.
Wow.
And looked at how we actually try to reskill them. Some of them have become farmers. Others are weaving baskets, and I think the list goes on, but I think it's, yeah, puts a big smile on our faces.
Bilal, I'm already impressed because it's not so often that you see financial services institutions, sure, you know, extend this kind of help, but as you say, be on the ground, back in their local villages to actually make sure that there is a sense of sustainability. And this leads me to want to ask a question around leadership, right? You yourself are a chartered accountant, so many would say, okay, technical in your thinking, you know, be in counter, add up the numbers, but there must be some interesting lessons you can share with us in terms of leading with empathy. And looking beyond the numbers to actually see people through the books that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when I started off my career, I was a typical accountant.
Yes.
So I think looking at the numbers and worrying about things like that. But over time, I think you've developed from more your old age leadership to your new age leadership. Lots of people that I worked with, lots of very wise, philosophical people who I think have taught me over the years, you know, to change my mindset. And I guess it's all about people, you know. I mean, when you look at it, it's all about, I've been taught, it's about making a difference in people's lives. I think there's a Chinese proverb that goes by saying that if you want to be happy for an hour, take a nap. If you want to be happy for a day, go fishing. If you want to be happy for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want to be happy for a lifetime, make a difference in someone's lives. So I think that's what we go out to do, and that's what we try to teach our staff to do, you know?
Yeah.
Lots of focus on trying to make difference in people's lives and also for our staff itself, you know? I think we're a very highly people-focused organization. We do understand that it's our people that drive the company. It's not machines. So if you want to develop a system, it's people that do it. If you need to pay a pensioner, it's people that do it. If you need to collect premiums, it's people that do it. So I think we're a very people-focused organization.
Yeah. You've been at the helm of RMA Life since November 2020.
That's right.
A difficult time to take over, right? And I can imagine within the midst of the pandemic, lockdown, witnessing many trends. What's the journey been like over the last 2.5 years?
Yeah, I think it's about having a positive mindset. So obviously with COVID coming in, there were lots of challenges. But I like to see challenges as interesting, and trying to overcome those challenges, I think, is what makes life meaningful.
Definitely.
And so I think we didn't see it as a time that we, as a big challenge. We saw it more as an opportunity. And I think it was actually good timing in the sense that a lot of the larger companies that you find in the life insurance space who had wonderful relationships with their clients, let them down during COVID, you know, whether it's in terms of claims and premiums increases. And what we found, the market was quite open to longer term sustainable relationships. So that's when we came in. We obviously have very niche, we play in a very niche space, like I said, where we have quite a strong differentiating factor. I told you earlier on that we're the only one in the RMA life space to do what we do.
Yes.
So when I joined in 2020, I very quickly realized that we have a very differentiating factor that I think gave us a competitive advantage, and we've done quite well since.
And given your years of experience and expertise within the insurance space, has that, I guess, shifted your view as to what pertinent issues the insurance industry in South Africa and maybe the continent as a whole really needs to plug into?
Absolutely. So I think over my career, I worked for some big corporates, you know, Nedbank, I think, Parmedia, going over to the Imperial Group, Regent, and obviously lots of all large listed companies, very commercially driven. And I think when I moved over to Rand Mutual in 2015 as Group CFO then, it was an eye-opener. I remember an interview I had with the board where they asked me about my experience. There was lots of things I was talking about, and they stopped me at one point and said, but what about the worker? what about the beneficiaries? Sure. Tell us a bit more about them. So I think that was quite a powerful moment in terms of changing my mind. And I think, yeah, that made all the difference, you know. So I think definitely there's been a change over time.
Yeah.
And I think the focus now has become more on the policyholder. I think that's being driven in South Africa, but I think it's something that we have to live, you know.
Mm.
And it's quite important in the culture of the organization as well.
And I can imagine within the construct of the society we live in, right, where it's so unequal, and for many of the beneficiaries and workers that you cover, this really is an extended hand to their livelihood and the sustainability of families just being able to survive and have access to some of the basics we might take for granted in our local environment. I'm keen to talk to you as a leader, though, and reflecting on the talent pool in South Africa. Again, building on the years of expertise you have focused on insurance. Looking at your website, I do see that you not only focus on insurance solutions, IT as well, but even training. What's the environment like in terms of the talent pool that you're looking to unlock in South Africa in order to make sure that an entity like yours can continue to make a difference in society?
So if you look at my team as an example, and even our group, I think it's largely a young team, young first South Africans, very representative of the population, and I think we're doing fantastically well. In my view, I think we have massive talent in South Africa. I think it's the leadership that actually manages the talent is where the issue is, you know. It was Einstein who said that if you're going to judge a fish by how it climbs a tree, you're not going to do very well.
True.
But if you judge it by how it swims, it's going to make a big difference, you know. In the one case, you may think it's stupid, and the other, you may think it's a genius. So I think it's all about managing and nurturing the talent under you as a leader. And I've got no doubt in South Africa, there's tons and tons of talents. I think it's just about having the right leadership to unearth that talent. But I think we can see it even in our organization. I mean, it's a very young team. Like I said, it's a fully black team that we have, a very energetic, looking forward, and we outed, I think, all the life insurance companies in South Africa in the last 2 years from our ROEV perspective, which is a return on embedded value, or like a return on equity, you know. So I think it proves that the young talent is in South Africa. It's just a matter of managing it correctly and nurturing the talent and unearthing it, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, speaking of unearthing talent, and of course you being a talented leader yourself, and speaking to the mandate of RMA Life, what's next? You've been in the job for just over 2 years. As you look to continue to make an impact in the lives of people, driven by purpose, as you've mentioned, and changing the lives of beneficiaries through the collaborative efforts of your employees, what can we expect from your business going forward?
So I think the first thing, and I've been taught this before, is for me to make a difference in our employees' lives. I think that's probably the first thing that we need to do. We also need to make a difference in the lives of our beneficiaries. So I think that's what we'd start off with, and I was taught that if you do that, the rest will follow. And I've got no doubt in the next 10 years, some of our targets are quite big. But yeah, I think watch the space. I think we're looking to challenge some of the big guys in South Africa, and I think we're pretty confident that we will get there.
Oh, looking forward to it, Bailal. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and thank you so much for giving us a refreshing view and perspective on compensation for occupational injuries and just how far-reaching it is and the many aspects that you touch on. Thank you so much for your time this evening, Bailal.
Yeah, thank you for having us, yeah.
Fantastic. That's Bailal Adam, who's joined us as our Pivot Point guest this evening, the CEO of Rand Mutual Assurance Life, giving us some insight not only into his business, but of course how, at the end of the day, when you think about and consider compensation for occupational injuries and diseases, it really does go back to the person, the beneficiary at the end of the day, and how it is that you're looking to make an impact in their life. It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock.